The meeting will come to order. I believe we have a quorum. Representative Christensen, have you reviewed the minutes?
Mr. Chair, I move the minutes from February 27th.
Thank you. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Fun little day today. Get my agenda out. Oh, you got it here. Representative Zerwas, are you ready to proceed?
Ready.
Did I sign this one? Oh, I thought I had.
Mr. Chair, I think the motion is for House File 1020 to be held over for possible inclusion in the division report. Is that the chair? Is that
correct.
The motion? I'll make that motion now, Mr. Thank Chair. Mr. Chair, committee, House File 1020 is a pretty simple bill, and I know that's usually a code word to start running and take cover. Stearns County Sheriff's Office contacted me following some concerns they have and some challenges that they're facing with current state law. Current state law says that any time an inmate is transferred greater than 100 miles, a same-sex deputy or corrections official must make the transport. And what Stearns County and other sheriff's offices and counties in greater Minnesota are finding as challenging is when they transport female inmates, that a majority of their transports are over 100 miles, and that when they transfer a female inmate and that requires the use of a female deputy, that that deputy is then being taken off of the street and being utilized for the prisoner transport. As you can imagine, a several hundred mile transport, when you talk round trip, ends up taking that female deputy off of the street for the bulk of their patrol shift, leaving them shorthanded to do in-custody searches and other stuff to provide those services with a female deputy to female suspects they would encounter during that shift. And so when Stearns County reached out to me, one of the things I appreciated is they reached out with a problem, and they also reached out with a proposed solution. And the proposed solution is to utilize very common and already existing technology in the law enforcement world of in-squad car video cameras, and in this instance, an in-squad car video camera that is directed to the rear or prisoner compartment of the vehicle in order to document the ongoing activity within the rear seat of the vehicle. And so their proposal was to waive the same-sex 100-mile plus inmate transport rule if the duration of the entire transport was recorded using audio and video recordings, and then those recordings were retained for a period of 12 months. Members, that's how the bill is drafted. I spoke with the Minnesota Sheriff's Association, and they are supportive of the language.
Are there questions for Representative Zerwas? Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Zerwas, for fixing this problem. I know that it's a concern in greater Minnesota. Is there anyone that's opposed to this change that you're aware of?
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, I have not been contacted by anybody with any concerns as of yet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, so how do body searches happen then if there's not a female?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Zerwas.
The Representative Christensen, the transport protocol would have a same-sex, a search prior to the departure, and then a search by a corrections official at arrival, but would not include a search unless something untoward happened during the transport itself.
Okay, thank you.
Anybody else? That's a great use of technology. It's a good bill. I kind of like it. So we're going to hold this over for... All right. Anybody from the audience wish to make any comments? Once, twice. Not seeing anybody. We will remove your motion to
thank you, Mr.
lay it
Chair.
Over.
Yes,
yeah.
Mr. Chair.
Any last words or...
Sorry, Mr. Chair, I just realized you're just laying this over. Does this need to go to judiciary civil law since it has data involved?
Representative Zerwas.
Mr. Chair, my contention would be that since this doesn't change anything with the statute regarding who would have access to the video or how the video would be shared, my contention is that it would not need to go to civil law or judiciary. I can speak to Chair Lesh, and if he has concerns with the language, I suppose it could be rolled up into the omnibus bill you're planning on bringing there. But I wouldn't foresee that just for what the bill does. But I commit to you and the committee that I'll reach out to Chair Lesh today and ask him.
Thank you, Representative Zerwas. Any other questions? Anybody else? Anybody else again from the public? All right. Bill will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Listigard.
Mr. Chair, with your indulgence, I'd like to sweeten you guys up a little bit with some treats.
Oh, good move there, Representative Listigard. I've been calling that for a while. I've just been told that after all these months I'm mispronouncing your last name.
Oh, no problem, Mr. Chair.
Well, no, as somebody that's kind of insisted on having his name done right, I'm a little sensitive to that. Would you proceed, Representative?
Yes, I would like to, if someone could move Bill 1159.
Representative Wolgamott, would you like to do that?
What's that?
Move it. Never mind. The chair will move it for possible layover.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So the bill before you is really in a capital investment into a facility that on the Iron Range in Greater Minnesota is making things sustainable long term for a facility that hopefully changes the lives of individuals, residents of this facility, that they're productive when they come out. And without this investment, I got to be honest with you, it's we're not sure where it's gonna land or if it's gonna be feasible moving forward. So this is critical. It's approximately 140 union jobs that are extremely important. It's a one-to-one. And here with me today is John Ongaro that can walk through the whole project and the importance.
Proceed.
Morning, Mr. Chair and members. I'm John Ongaro, Government and Relations Director for St. Louis County. I'd like to just briefly, for those of you who haven't had the opportunity to tour our facility over the past years, we have a roughly 144-bed adult male facility. You have our brochure. You can see some of the pretty pictures of what we call is a workhouse that works. It is got one of the lowest recidivism rates of any correctional facility in the state of Minnesota, and We attribute that to, of course, the fact that we have a 3,200-acre farm where the individuals in that facility, rather than sitting around all day watching TV or lifting weights, we have them out working on that 3,200-acre farm. We've got everything from a lot of vegetables, primarily raised corn and wheat and other vegetables, but we also have a meat processing facility at the or on the campus, and that is literally the nerve center of our work farm. We process meat, we raise pigs and other cattle on the premises, as well as turkeys, chickens, you name it. And we process those primarily for the actual facility itself and helps feed the inmates there. And there are local farmers that come and bring their cattle, and we process the cattle for them too. And the Department of Corrections loves this facility, but they also know that that meat processing facility per se is from the Depression era. And for years they've been telling us, you have to literally replace that facility or else we're going to have to close it down. Going back to literally over 5 years ago, the legislature in a previous bonding bill did give us over $1 million towards the eventual replacement of that facility. In the emergency bonding bill in 2015, they again gave us additional funding of about $600,000 to replace that facility, but we're still about $1 million short in order to construct a new meat processing, food processing facility. So the primary item which we'll be asking for as part of this $2.85 million bonding request is $1 million of that will go towards the completion of funding for the meat processing facility, so we can have a new modern facility that will allow the entire work farm and its main operations to continue well into this century. That, in a nutshell, is the purpose of this bill. In addition, I can just briefly say that we do have other work-related activities there, from a welding shop to a carpentry shop to a mechanical shop. Unfortunately, the only of those three that I just mentioned, the mechanic shop is the only building that is still operational. When our carpenter retired years ago, the Arrowhead Regional Corrections Board did not replace that carpenter, so the carpentry shop is just sitting there idle, waiting for activity again. Likewise, with the welding shop, the same identical problem has occurred. The good news is that we have interest from various building trades, and they are willing to work with us at bringing someone in part-time into the carpentry shop to help teach the inmates carpentry as well as the welding shop. So those are two of the additional investments that we would be making with this $2.85 million request. With that, I'll stand for any questions.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering, was this included in the governor's budget, bonding budget?
Mr. Chair and Representative O'Neill, no, it was not included in the governor's budget, but it has been included in previous governor's requests.
Mr. Chair.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you. And can you also just let us know who's housed there, which inmates you've got? I didn't realize this was part of the DOC system, but.
Mr. Chair and Representative O'Neill, these are essentially mostly felons that have been sentenced to a year or less in prison. And going back to the Community Corrections Act of 1976, the philosophy, of course, was rather than send lower-level offenders or shorter-sentenced offenders into distilled water in our other state institutions. For those that are sentenced to a year or less, the philosophy was, let's try to have them serve on the local level, and that's the philosophy behind this. So we have, you know, a 144-bed facility. You can see on the cover page of this handout, that is the $7 million investment which the Joint Powers Board recently made in totally rehabbing the main unit on that campus where the prisoners stay and the cafeteria, et cetera, is. And so that's the main main building that what we like to call is our super match towards this bonding project, is that we've already invested $7 million locally into this facility to help more than meet our match.
And just last question.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious where the funding comes from for this facility in general. Is some of it DOC or?
Sure. Mr. Chair and Representative O'Neill, we'd like to say that most of it comes through the state of Minnesota, but back in the mid-70s when the Community Corrections Act started, I think, if my numbers are correct, for every $2 that the local property taxpayers committed, there'd be $1 from the state of Minnesota through the CCA subsidy. Today, unfortunately, that ratio has eroded so that local governments, county governments, are investing roughly $5 for every $1 that we get through the Community Corrections Act subsidy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative O'Neill. I actually have toured your facility. It's been a few years, but, yeah, it does help with prison overcrowding because a lot of the short-termers end up there rather than going to the state prison, and they do have wonderful programming there. And I hope you get the carpentry and the welding back, given the shortage that we're seeing in a lot of communities. But they actually do have quite a bit of programming going on there that's really pretty good. Okay. Anybody from the audience? Oops. I'm sorry, Representative Posen.
Mr. Chair, both of my questions were asked and answered. Thank you.
Did I miss anybody else? Nope. Anybody from the audience like to give their input? Ms. Brooks, come on down. Ms. Brooks, if you want to, you need to come to the testifier table and identify yourself and stuff. Technical terms, yes.
Good morning, and thank you, Chairman. Besides the term of the felon's time, how else do you determine who gets to be part of your program?
Oh, please state your name for the
record. I'm Sharon Brooks.
Okay, now proceed.
Besides the term of the felon's time, a year or less, how do you determine who gets to be part of your program?
Mr. Chair, I have no idea. I'll ask Mr. Angaro to come back up.
Mr. Chair, this is...
Yeah. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you. We don't normally let the public ask questions. That's the members' purview. They can give testimony, but we typically don't let them ask questions.
Okay, thank you. You're correct. It is out of order. If you don't mind, though, just go ahead and answer the question since it's been asked, and I'm sure other people would like to know.
Sure, Mr. Chair. Essentially, it's a group effort, for lack of a better term. I mean, the judges are the ones that are the primary individuals that determine where that individual will be sentenced to. And, of course, they work with the county attorneys and our corrections officials to determine who would be best suited to serve on the local level rather than possibly, anyways, be sent to a state facility.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative O'Neill. You are correct. So if there are other people that wish to testify, you get to express your opinion, not cross-examine. We get to do that. All right. Anybody else? Okay. We're going to refer this to the Public Safety Department. We're going to renew the motion to refer to the Public Safety Department. And so, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Motion carries. We refer to Public Safety.
Thank you.
Okay. Next up, we have Representative Becker Finn. Proceed, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So House File 754 is commonly referred to as the Mama's Bus Bill.
I'm sorry. need to make the motion to lay this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Is that what you're going to tell me? Yeah. Thank you. Now proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So House File 754 is the Mama's Bus Pilot Project. It would fund a pilot project to provide transportation to connect kids to their moms who are incarcerated at Shakopee. This bill has been floating around for a couple years, but we're hoping this is finally the year where we can move things forward. So a couple things I want to make folks aware of. So at Shakopee, at any given time, 19 to 25% of the women incarcerated at Shakopee are Native American. In the general population, Native Americans make up less than 2% of the population. So the fact that, you know, at any given time, 1 in 5 or 1 in 4 inmates in Shakopee is a Native woman, and many of them are moms, is very troubling. And so we're trying to, you know, this project would also really help with that disproportionate impact. And we also know research has shown us that recidivism rates go down when people have more contact with their families, and especially for moms with their kids, in addition to helping with the children of incarcerated parents, you know, not having that contact with their mom can lead to further trauma. And in addition, House File 754, the majority of the children who would be served by this program would be kids who've otherwise not had a chance to visit their moms while they're incarcerated. And I do have a couple testifiers, so I will have most of my time go to them to talk about this program.
Proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Deborah Jongstein. I'm founder of the Prison Project. To situate myself, I've been working in prisons over 10 years around the country, and based in Minneapolis, I've spent recent years focusing in Shakopee. I have been in front of something like 30,000 women in 15 states. I see exactly the same issues. Besides an average of fourth grade reading level, which we have here with most prisoners, 85%, as you've heard lots before, are mothers of young children. It's common knowledge about the brain science with children, especially of toxic stress, trauma, and we want to break that domino effect of trauma as well as help close that literacy gap, help the prisoners raise that literacy by reading with their children, and we want to track what happens in schools over this two-year pilot. We're proposing twice a month, so they read together, there's bonding, and they can hug. For many of the, especially the 5 and 6 years old, they never have hugged their mother. This would give Minnesota a chance to be a pioneer in the country. There's no other state. There are other faith organizations, but no other state that has an organized, credible transportation system that has the children visit and then is evaluated. In support of Mama's Bus, I received a written testimony from a woman whose mother was incarcerated and the impact of that separation on her. And then I have a brief comment after before we move on to the others. This woman volunteers currently at Shakopee. Mr. Chair and committee members, I'm writing today in relation to proposed statutes HF 754. Currently, I'm a 39-year-old female. the daughter of a woman who was incarcerated at a maximum security prison for 7 years. I was 19 years old at the time. My siblings were a lot younger, ages 4, 5, and 6. I'm writing to share just a little bit what that was like. This experience 20 years later, still to this day, is tough to speak about. I can talk to you only through a great deal of healing, therapy, and forgiveness that I've undergone. During the period of my mother's incarceration, it was difficult to visit her. Visitation was almost impossible. Visitation hours did not work with my school, and the warden and patrol sergeants in available space made everything impossible. We would visit in a cafeteria. The hours didn't work. There was no bonding, quotes she has. I feel if we had the opportunities that this bill is proposing, the start of healing for both of us and my mother could have happened sooner. People think that when a person returns to the community after rehabilitation, there's a magic switch that everything is just fine. In my experience, that's not the case. Due to the longer period of separation, we had to build our relationships back up. Today, I work with females in the DOC community in Minnesota. My goal is to share my experience, strength, and hope with these women to let them know that hope is alive, to let them know that forgiveness, rehabilitation, and moving forward from your crime is possible. Families reunite when given the chance. Healing does happen. I believe the passing of this bill will provide a great chance for these things to be possible. And my last comment is I'd like to share that I'm a product of this system of trauma separation. I had a year inside a prison with my birth mother. She was allowed to have a few books. I'm aware that I had no toys. I received nothing from her. Our program proposes that we will donate books in the visiting room. We want to turn that visiting room into a library. Things on the bus with their learning activities. Part of the, and Mr. Chair, I want to thank you for that help in looking into other bus companies. We found one in the Mankato area because overhead is lower in an area, not the Twin Cities. So our bus costs have gone up because we will be busing from Beltrami County, which is a four-hour ride. And I've heard from the prison that the children will think that's a novel idea, but it's expensive. We'll be covering White Earth, Red Lake, and Leech Lake and bringing maybe 30 kids from that area, 50 from the Twin Cities. And when they get here, they'll have 2 hours in the prison to read and do crafts. And that may sound sort of fluffy to you, but I need you to know that I have one piece of evidence from my birth mother that she sent into foster care. I received that, obviously, you know, some 50 years ago. And so when these children get a piece of craft that they've done in the visiting room, believe me, it matters. And I hear that from the inside. I don't carry this around with me every day. It's set somewhere, and my children have seen it, and they know the story. And so I am the generation that broke several generations of incarceration, and I'm a product of that history as well. And we have a chance to be a pioneer, so I'm looking forward to – we've been a small organization, an army of volunteers and interns and a small board, and we're looking forward to moving something ahead like this. So it will impact a lot of children. We have 3 states watching this policy, which would like to roll it out after something starts here. Thank you.
Any questions or comments from the committee? Representative Tafke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much for bringing this forward. I am the representative for Shakopee, and so I've had the opportunity to tour the prison many times and see all of the incredible work that is being done there for helping to connect mothers with their children. And the visiting room is there's a lot of really great things happening there. So I hope that as a committee, sometime in the future, we get to go and check that out. Couple questions on this is there's definitely space in Shakopee for doing things, but how many kids and how, like, what's the impact on the actual correctional facility when this happens? Are you going to bring, is it 30 kids at a time will go to this, and that, how does that work, and how does that interact with what's going on a day-to-day basis within the facility?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we know that something new has happened in the visiting room. The warden has, I think they've been delivered, but we have someone from the DOC to testify to that. The tables are now round so the children can touch. There will be approximately 50 to 75, and the visiting room can hold that. And there have been some other changes in visitation. For example, the children will be able to use the restroom. I mean, what kid doesn't go to the bathroom as soon as they arrive somewhere? So that's changed because normally the visit would be over. We think up to 80 children coming in from the Beltrami area in a separate bus and then the Twin Cities area on another bus. A two-hour visit on the weekends will have chaperones and former teachers and people involved on the ride and then in the prison. So the space is there, and my understanding is that the facility is welcoming this kind of program. I've talked to them about it for years, and we have someone who will testify about the research that the DOC has done.
And more follow-up, Deputy. I've also talked to the warden about this, and she's generally very positive about this program and what it can do and the great things that can happen for the inmates in Shakopee. So thank you very much for bringing it forward.
Thank you.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Since your organization is very new to us, I'm just wondering if you could just tell us a little bit more about the End Prison Project. We haven't heard from your organization before.
Yes, thank you for that question, Mr. Chair. Representative, I started this work over 10 years ago, working nationally, and I had two young kids at the time. My youngest is 18, so I needed to not travel. And because we only have one female prison here, I was drawn and asked. I've been invited into other states, so that's how it's happened. I've been in, you know, over 15 states. We're small, but a large reach, volunteer run, and also run by, and a small board run by people who have either been inside prison and have come out, not run by, but donated time and expertise. A lot of our work has been in public awareness, speaking in conferences. Many people, when I mentioned that I was born inside a prison and had my first 12 months in a 4x6 cell, people will be shocked that women are pregnant when they go to prison. Well, we know that's up to 10% are. So I'm lucky, you know, what I thought was a curse has been a blessing to be able to bring that message out. And the goal of the Prison Project has been to raise awareness and also to make sure that women have programs and motivation to not resentence and reincarcerate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I actually have a small amendment in relation to that. Whenever you want to get to that, it's sort of in relation to the newness of this organization.
I will finish the testimony first, yeah. Then we'll talk about amendments. Do you have another testifier?
Sure do, Mr. Chair.
Good morning. Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Lori Timlin. I am the parenting coordinator at the correctional facility at Shakopee. I would like to say that I am privileged to express the support of the Department of Corrections, the Commissioner, for initiatives that reduce barriers to children visiting their parents in our facilities, and want you to know that our support of this is in part due to evidence which has revealed that these sorts of programs do enhance success, especially for women. I think that some of the numbers I was going to provide have already been given to you. We, 4 years ago, had a research study conducted by the University of Minnesota that revealed that 77% of the women who are incarcerated in our state have minor children. Of those 77%, 66% were actually living with their children when they came to prison, and a majority of those will go home to their children. Inmates who have visits, as we know, have lower rates of recidivism, and I must emphasize that men and women are different, and what women identify as being the greatest source of stress when they're incarcerated is their separation from their children and their concern about what is happening with their children. When men are incarcerated, when they have visits with their children, that most often occurs when the mother of the child brings the child to visit, And when women are incarcerated, it typically falls to a grandparent who may have care for numerous children, be on a fixed income, have some challenges in terms of bringing kids to visit. The largest obstacle for women in receiving visits is that the children are a distance from the facility, and they may not have a family member or a friend who can qualify to be on their visiting list. We do have a parenting program at Shakopee. However, we only have 60 beds, and our population right now is 613. So just a couple of examples of what I have been told by women at Shakopee. I worked with a mother who was an enrolled Mille Lacs band member. She had not seen her four-year-old daughter for 18 months because she had a lengthy incarceration on the local level. The child had some adjustment issues, was living with grandparents, and presented as depressed. On the first visit, this child was very timid and reluctant to separate from her grandparents. By the second visit, she skipped literally through the metal detector. She greeted the other children who were visiting and ran to her mom and said, "Mama." So in just having that one contact, there was a dramatic improvement. After 7 months of ongoing visits, the mom entered our CIP program, which is our boot camp program, and was successfully reunited with her child. Another mother, who also happens to be an enrolled Mille Lacs band member, her three children are living with her mother. This mom is caring for seven children under the age of 8 years. She lives in Onamia, which is quite some distance. She's in relatively good health, but she recently had knee surgery. We've had a terrible winter, etc. In order for her to visit, she has to leave home at 7 o'clock. She has to find babysitters for six or five kids. She has to incur the cost of meals. It's a really long day for these kids. The mom has been struggling because her oldest daughter, who's 7 years old, was actually suspended from school for misbehavior, and the child articulates, "I'm really mad because my mom is gone." So clearly this is a child who's feeling the impact of her mom not being there. I work with pregnant women in prison, and I worked with a very young woman who was 20 and had her first child in prison, who was fortunate to have visits, who said, being able to visit with my baby allowed me to parent my child, and because of that, I'm leaving prison and my baby knows me. And it was hard for her to imagine when her baby at age 8 months and they were reunited, if she had never had contact with her, what her baby would know about her. Comments from moms who have had visits with their children. "I do my time visit to visit. It reminds me there is a life outside the facility." Another woman, "The visits kept me alive. I mean that with all sincerity. It has given me hope to hang on." And another mom, "My kids are gone and I'm sad, but I'm grateful that they can come at all." And then I'll close with just a couple of comments from moms who, for various reasons, have not been able to have their children visit. "I feel like I have a hole in my chest and like a part of me is missing." Another mom, "It's awful. I've learned to brace myself or it will destroy me. We play a game where we say, 'I'm okay, you're okay,' but then we hang up the phone and I don't pretend anymore." Thank you.
Any questions for the testifier? Another testifier?
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Yvonne Seltzer, and it's a great pleasure to see and address some of my former colleagues this morning. However, I'm here today not as a former state representative, but as a teacher. When I first met Deborah, the founder of the Unprisoned Project, and heard her story and learned her dream of launching the Mama's Bus pilot project, I was immediately struck not only by the benefits that you've heard enumerated here to the moms, but I was excited as a teacher by the potential for the opportunities for improved literacy and academic performance for the children of these moms. Research shows that children who visit their mothers regularly in prison do better academically. This particular project, with its repeated and constant components of literacy, with the mom receiving a new book to read with the child at each visit, and then the child being able to take that book home, is almost guaranteed not only to improve reading achievement, but achievement in many other academic areas as the school transitions children from learning to read to reading to learn. The children in this program will actually develop over time a little home library of these treasured books, an opportunity they probably would not have had otherwise. Research has shown that simply having books in the homes of children is correlated with increased literacy. And just think about the attraction that these books will have for the child. Memories of mom's arms around her or him as they together read the books can only entice the child at home to pick up the book and do more reading. And all the while, this is increasing not only the child's reading ability, but it is reinforcing that reading is done not only at school, but outside the home. I know that you as legislators know that there are many components and that it's a very complex issue as we attempt to solve the tough puzzle of the achievement gap. It is my dream and hope that you will vote to launch this pilot program as a part of this complex effort and give this very at-risk and vulnerable population of children a chance at a better life. Thank you.
Representative Taft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick question on the program in general. As I'm sitting here and listening to everyone talk about the really great things that it can do, is the legislature the best place to fund a program like this? Is this the best place for that funding to come from, or is this better suited for grant programs, and why is this here as opposed to other places?
Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, so a couple things. If we were able to fund this with other sources, we would have done that already. I think the other piece to that is that overall it saves the state money to cut down on recidivism rates, for those kids to be doing better. There's kind of, those are things that are hard to measure, especially in a two-year budget cycle. But I think there are definitely benefits to the state as well as the prison. You know, if these moms are doing better because they're in regular contact with their families, you know, probably their, you know, behavior and the things that they're doing within Shakopee will be better too. So I think there are definite reasons that have both measurable and, you know, immeasurable benefits to our state overall by funding this. Thank you for the question.
Thank you.
Representative Taft, do you follow up?
I'm good.
Anyone? Representative Poston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How many of the offenders at the Shakopee facility have children?
The fire.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative, we currently have a population of 613 women. We estimate 77%. So if you think two-thirds, three-fourths of those women, we're talking upward of 400.
Wow.
And those are minor children.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Anything else, Representative Poston? Okay. Oh, Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Representative Taffy makes a good point. And, you know, I've done a few grant programs in my day. I'm curious, normally we would do a competitive grant, you know, so that any like agency or organization, I should say, would be eligible to try to do that. But we're not doing that here. We're doing a direct appropriation in essence. It's not a direct appropriation because it's a grant, but it's kind of like a direct appropriation because you've laid out exactly who's going to get the money. And I just want to get on the record that we don't normally do that, especially through DOC. So I just want to get that on the record. But I actually have a question after that. So I'm aware that the couple different programs have been tried in the past to bus kids to Shakopee particularly. It's another church organization had tried to do it. Nobody got on the bus. The DOC tried to do it. Nobody got on the bus. So they ended those programs. And I'm just wondering how are we going to be successful this time when it's been tried twice in the past and it wasn't?
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative. Unfortunately, so one of the grants of which I'm aware was part of an effort to reduce recidivism. They had specific criteria. They focused on those who are high risk. We have a screening tool called the MnSTAR. I think that part of the challenge of that is that oftentimes women who are very high risk are no longer connected to their children. So we may have been missing the mark somewhat in terms of the population who are eligible for the grant. I also think if we were to look at what makes one eligible to visit, again, women who are extremely high risk, who may have severed ties with their community, with their families, may not have someone who could qualify to bring a child to visit. Lastly, I think Ms. Johnstein has been thoughtful in terms of how her organization would partner with our facility, and so while they would be providing the program, we would also internally be working closely with her, and I think we could ensure greater participation.
Anything else, Representative Neal?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, now I'm kind of less confident. That wasn't much. I mean, I was hoping you were going to say something like, well, now we are going to do reading and we changed the room and we've done all of these proactive things. I was hoping that was going to be the answer because I'm not sure what had been done in the past, but maybe they just came to a very sterile, you know, visiting room and there wasn't a whole lot for the kids to do and they were bored and they didn't like it. So I was kind of expecting to hear that. In any case, I do have just other one question here real quick.
Mr. Chair, if I could respond.
And then the last question I have is this in the governor's budget request? And how supportive is the Department of Corrections? I don't think I saw it in there, but maybe I missed it. And how supportive is Department of Corrections if it's not in the budget?
It is in the budget.
It is. Okay.
Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to be fair, you know, any previous programs it was not this program. And I think this program that we're bringing forward right now is really unique in that we already have an established nonprofit and we have really a force in Deborah and the connection that's already been made, the volunteer time that's already been done. You know, it's, you know, we already talked about it's the visiting room is better. This is, you know, we're targeting the populations that are, you know, when we talk about Beltrami and Cass County, it's because we're talking about where there are very high populations of Native families and that would connect White Earth, Leech Lake, and Red Lake reservations and the people who live there to the facility. So I think, you know, I think it's unfair to hold this project to whatever's been done in the past, because I think this is really a unique and really great project. As to your question about the governor's budget, the chair mentioned, but we do have someone from the Department of Corrections who can speak to that.
Chair, Representative O'Neill, we do have the governor's budget does include funding for this type of programming.
Say your name for the record.
Yes, sorry. Chair, Safia Khan, I'm the Government Relations Director for the Department of Corrections. The governor's budget does include funding for this type of programming to go to DOC to give out in a competitive grant process, and we are, of course, very, very supportive of such programming. As Lori mentioned, it is directly connected to reducing recidivism and creating strong social networks because 95% of those who are incarcerated in our facilities will return to the community. We are committed to making sure that they have those ties and those get sustained throughout the incarceration period.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And can you remind us how much is in, it's a competitive grant, not a direct appropriation the way that this bill is written, but how much is in the competitive grant program?
Chair, Senator, it is $150,000 per year, so $300,000 for the biennium.
Oh, then Mr. Chair, I have a follow-up.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you. So in the bill, it's a one-year appropriation for 2020, but if it's for both years of the biennium, why is that different then? It's a similar amount, but different in the appropriations years.
Ms. Whoever would like to answer that.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, this bill was drafted long before the governor's budget existed. So, and to be clear, this isn't a department bill. This is you know, our bill that we're bringing forward. You know, we're certainly willing to work with folks, and as we try to make this program a reality, be open to being flexible on exactly what those numbers are. We obviously, because we wanted the program to be successful and we wanted to impact the most moms that we could, that's what those original numbers were based on. But if that needs to be scaled down, you know, as we heard from some of the testimony already, I think, you know, any family, you know, that we can benefit is a good thing. The more families we can benefit, the better.
Mr. Chair.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, was it possibly written because you need time to ramp up or organize? You said you're a very, very small organization. I think you have 3 people on your advisory board, and it's all volunteer. So I would be very cautious in how this is funded then, because why, you know, if we're going to appropriate money through this grant program, then we need to make sure that those on the receiving end are actually ready to use it and to implement it. So just wonder if you could speak to that.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we have partnered with several organizations, but one, National Council of Jewish Women, is active in policy. Their administrative assistant staff will be on our staff, so they will be ramping up. They're familiar with this field, and you'll see in the staffing descriptions, they are a part of that. So we bring the expertise from the inside out. They will bring the expertise of added to ours of management and running the program. And we reduced it from 3 years because I didn't know, actually. We wanted to have a longer track. So the new current budget is for 2 years.
I have one final question.
Okay, and then would you like to move your amendment at this particular point?
Thank you. The last question is just really quick. I don't think I heard it in the testimony, but who are the folks that are actually going to do the programming once they get to the prison? Is it DOC staff, or is it volunteers, or who's actually doing that?
My understanding is that our volunteers will go in, but they are the DOC volunteers who currently bring wellness programs, AA and Al-Anon. Maybe they'll come out of the faith communities, but they've already been vetted and trained by the prison. So we don't want to add any burden to the prison. And then, as you see, we have staff support and the warden and assistant warden. So we're drawing on what already exists, bringing a strong administrative staff from this other organization and bringing the two together, and then my credibility with the women.
Another one?
Nope, I was just going to move the amendment.
Okay, Representative O'Neill moves her amendment. Representative Poston, I have not forgotten you. You're on the list. Representative O'Neill moves to adopt the A1 amendment to House File 754. Is there discussion? Representative O'Neill, perhaps you'd like to explain the amendment first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just as I was saying before, this is an organization that has not come before the legislature before. We haven't heard them. They're very, very small. And so I'm just asking for a bit more information when they report back to us at the legislature of their success in implementation. And so this is actually adding their federal and state financial reports to also be submitted when they submit their other report.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill. Is there any questions about the amendment? Representative Becker-Finn, do you have any comments on the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just became aware of the amendment this morning, but I look forward to coming back and telling you how successful this program will be. So thank you.
Anybody else? Representative Poston? No, not to the amendment. Okay. Okay, we'll renew the motion and vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Okay, the motion passes. The A1 amendment has been adopted to House File 754. Representative O'Neill, are you completed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Poston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question, and I'm not sure who this question goes to, but someone mentioned qualifying kids to get on the bus. Can you just explain that to me, how that process works?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, in order for a minor child to enter a Department of Corrections facility, the visitor must qualify, which means the most common challenge to that is if they have an open criminal case of their own, if they have been convicted of certain offenses, etc. You have to have valid identification. You must present the child's birth certificate as well as a statement from the current guardian, if the parent is the one who's incarcerated, that gives permission for the child to enter. So it's something of a laborious process.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I thought that was a little longer. Goodness gracious. Okay. Where are we at then? Okay. Any last words?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thank everyone for their time. You know, most of the members of this committee are signed on to this bill, and I thank you for your support. I do want to, you know, to get back to what this program is really about. Being in prison is expensive for families. And the parents that are in prison, it's the Department of Corrections. It's not the Department of Punishment. And who really is being harmed by not spending time with their parents are the kids of incarcerated parents. And you know, as much as a child might want to see their parents, no matter what they do, they're never going to be able to go find that money on their own and find that transportation on their own. And, you know, a lot of us probably take this for granted, but to have the gas money to drive from Cass Lake, Minnesota to Shakopee, to have a car that will even work to get you that far and get you home, the food in between, all of those things, this is really about making sure that the children of moms who are incarcerated are not also being punished by our system. And, you know, I have my kids are 4 and 8. And I think as a parent, and I think, you know, most of you on this committee are parents, one of the most heartbreaking things that I can ever imagine would be being forcefully separated from my children. And that really is what the moms at Shakopee are dealing with. And so, and for a child to be separated from their parents is heartbreaking. And so I think that really, you know, we can, you know, quibble about, you know, exactly how we do it. And we're open to talking this through and getting us to a place where this can work. But the impact that this could have, not just for the women who are incarcerated, but their greater communities and future generations of kids, so that we can have more kids who are like Deborah, who can disrupt that cycle of ending up in prison and, you know, being incarcerated. I think that's just incredibly important, and we can't put a price on how important that is. So I thank you for your time and your attention and for your support of this bill. We're really excited about it, and I think, you know, we've got bipartisan support in both houses. We have the governor's office, the lieutenant governor in particular, very supportive of this program, and we really hope that it can move forward. So thank you so much.
With that, the chair renews his motion to hold the bill over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you. Up next would be Representative Dean. Representative Dean, chair would like to move that House File 1518 be held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Would you proceed, please?
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. some of what we might say might seem a little bit duplicative of what was previously said, but I also think it's important that we say that, you know, monies for transportation of families and loved ones come visit those who have been locked up is a big concern. As was mentioned previously, you know, many families don't have the income or the ability to do that. And if you look at those individuals that are behind bars in prison, they tend to be those that oftentimes struggle on the lower end of the economic scale. And when we talk about visitation, we know what that means. But it's important not only to those who are locked up, it's also really critically important to those family members and loved ones who are then separated from those individuals that are locked up. You know, the previous program that was laid out was targeted primarily at mothers and women that are locked up, but we have a large population of men that are locked up as well. And those men are connected to other individuals in addition. So, you know, we know that visitation plays a critical role in reducing recidivism. We know that. That's been proven. That's number. This isn't conjecture. It's not anecdotal. It's actually known. And we know that those individuals that don't have visitors come and visit them when locked up are actually the ones that are most likely to reoffend. So when we look at 1518, this is actually a pretty comprehensive program that addresses lots of different areas of the metro region. And we know that we have people locked up in many different areas throughout the state. Sometimes individuals are a few hours away from their family or their place of residence. So I am actually going to you have the bill in front of you. I hope you've all read it. I'm going to turn this over to Ms. Sharon Brooks, who is actually the director of the program, who's been doing this work incredibly for the past couple of years, but at a very, very tiny scale. She has worked hard to try to assure that she's able to provide some of those services to some of those families, but a lot of families get left behind. So, Ms. Brooks, if you'd like to start your testimony, that would be great.
Ms. Brooks, will you state your name for the record, please?
Yes, Sharon. I'm Sharon Brooks. I'm the founder and CEO of Peace of Hope. We were established in 2012 doing this work. And as he mentioned, for the past couple of years, I was under contract with the DOC to do this work for all 10 prisons. I served 17 counties, including Beltrami. And just been at it a long time. Would like to expand to our entire state and serve all families without the restrictions of high risk or any risk, just all families of the incarcerated. This time last year, this bill was before you. Representative Dean authored it. And at that time, I had served under the contract with the DOC about 47 families. This time, without the contract, which expired in September, I've turned down double that number of families. This results in feelings of hopelessness, despair, increased potential for crime in our community, kids missing school because the mom, the caretaker at home, just can't hardly function without some type of communication with her loved one in prison, usually a man. The kids do suffer, definitely. So it's not my pleasure to turn them down, but there's a cost associated with providing the transportation to our 10 prisons. There's a cost associated with assisting someone in getting an ID so that they can register to get transportation to the prison. There's a cost associated with everything we do. And because we're small, We are small. We're 7 years in, but we're still small. We do provide some of those services pro bono, so to speak. We teach JPay, which is a method of communication that the Department of Corrections has a contract with for people who can't go visit. They can learn JPay, so we teach it for free at our office at Neon every month to families who cannot afford to visit. They just can't. And it provides some measure of relief. However, there's nothing like seeing your person in person, to touch them, to hug them, and we know that. So our first year of existence from 2012 to 2013, we did this for free out of rental cards. It was very expensive for me. I depleted most of my savings, but I had a bigger heart, and I just wanted to do it. And some of those testimonies that I've gotten back and stayed in touch with those families resulted well because their family members are now out. I heard someone mention that 95% of them are getting out. That's true. They do. They get out. And they remember us, and they come and volunteer with us. They want to be part of the solution. So I'm here today, and thank you, Representative Dean, for authoring this bill to see if we could expand our reach. Sir Walton Prison and some of the HOP sites, which many of our prisoners are at, in jails, contracted with the DOC. We'd like to serve them, the families, to go see them there. They're very far. They're very hard to reach. There are no bus lines. And we just want to continue to do the work that we're doing, which is not only a lift service to the prison. We're a full-service organization. We get you registered. We do an orientation with you, which the DOC has adopted. The Know Your Doc, which educates about the prison, the policies, and it releases some of that fear and the narrative of prison from the families. They don't go in so defensive, so we have less rowdiness from the visitors. We do a lot of educational stuff. We provide those things such as IDs, babysitters, chaperones. Special needs, wheelchair accessibility is really big, and other needs. And as far as educational for the children, our group always provides coloring books or whatever games. We have some of those things at our disposal, and we do a follow-up. We do a follow-up with our small organization, mostly ran by volunteer staff. We do follow-up of the visit and hopefully do a continued visit. So Peace of Hope has been around for a while. We have deep connections in the community. We look to serve, if this bill is approved, some 3,000 to 5,000 people of the 10,000 people who are incarcerated. That's because over half of the people incarcerated are of low economic status, low educational status, may not even know how to register. We're there to teach. We're there to help, to alleviate the stresses, and hopefully to make a better community, one by one community, and for our entire state.
Thank you. Representative Poston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of questions. The first one is for you, Representative Dean. Can you just define family for me? Who does that include?
Mr. Chair and Representative Poston, I think that family primarily is those blood relatives, but we also know that family sometimes extends beyond that. You know, we have uncles, we have, you know, cousins, we have, you know, friends of parents who may be an integral part of the family. So I don't think we've defined it as strictly as blood relatives, but as individuals that, you know, are connected to those who would be incarcerated. Now, we're not talking about, you know, people that they may have associated with at the time that they may have gotten in trouble. That's sort of a different type of family. I think the goal here is families, individuals that would have positive influence on the individual who was locked up.
Thank you. My next question, and I'm sorry I didn't hear your last name, but it's
Sharon Brooks
for the testifier.
Go ahead, Mr. Postman, Representative Postman.
You said in a couple of, sorry, thank you, Mr. Chair. You said in a couple of at a couple of occasions that you were a small organization. This is a $800,000 appropriation. What have your costs been like over the last couple of years per year?
Go ahead, Ms. Brooks.
Chair, Representative. The cost over the past couple of years has been increasingly exceeding $100,000. Okay. And yes, that's small. And it's not covering, again, it was for 17 counties. Our state has 82 counties?
87.
87 counties? We were marginalized.
Okay.
And funding was big part of it. So to answer your question, we've approached $100,000.
Representative Postman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So that's a big jump from $100,000 to $800,000. Can you tell us how you'll utilize that funding?
Ms. Chair, Brooks.
Representative, I did. I submitted a budget plan.
I got it yesterday. I have not disseminated that to the... Is it in the folders? Okay. I take it back. I did.
Okay.
Can you reference your budget plan, Representative? We anticipate with the growing number from servicing under 1,000 people to up to 5,000 people, we will need more money. Our plan is laid out roughly. Maybe a typing area in there, but not on the money side. If you'd like to ask me a question from the plan.
Representative Postman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry I hadn't gotten this far in my package. I see some of this information is provided. Thank you very much. One other question, if I may, Mr. Chair.
You may.
Do you have a board that you work with that governs your organization?
Yes, we are 501c3, and I do have a board and an advisory board.
Okay.
So an elected board and an advisory board.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir.
Representative Zerwas, I'll get to you and you're next. But I understand you now have your own vehicles, your own vans, is that correct?
We do. We moved from renting cars, taking people to the prison some years ago. So we do have two vans, an SUV, and a small car. And those have been really, really useful, but they're not adequate for the numbers who require the services. We have some 10,000 prisoners in our state prisons at any given time, and I'd say from 3,000 to 5,000 of them will benefit from the services of Peace of Hope Transit.
Thank you, Ms. Brooks. Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think a question for the testifier. It's my understanding that you've had a DOC grant in the past. What was the last grant period that you had a grant, and what was that grant total amount for?
Yes. Chair, Representative. The grant period, you said, it was 18 months total time frame from 16 to late 17. 2016 to late 17. It was inclusive of what we're asking for now with stipulations for the 17 counties only and only for families of high-risk offenders. The amount appropriated was $40,000. $40,000. And did you ask another question?
Representative Zerwas.
Mr. Chair, I think the follow-up question is, the testifier is stating that the Peace of Hope Trail or Peace of Hope Transit program received a $40,000 grant for an 18-month period. How many visits were performed under that grant award and during that time period?
Ms. Brooks.
Chair, Representative. The visits were only part of the contract. our services are all-inclusive. So the contract included providing registration, IDs, babysitters, chaperones. We did a conglomerate of services that numbered into the hundreds. But the actual visits, to answer your question, was about 57. It took us a while to get the hang of the program, how we were going to communicate with one another, the DOC, to Peace of Hope. There was a change in guard during that time, the person who I had been trained with, and it was a lot of mess. We really needed more time to mature with one another, and we learned the hard way. So towards the end, but along with our services, we serve some 200 to 300 families, but actual visits, under 60.
Representative Zerwas.
Mr. Chair, my request at this time would be that the Department of Corrections provide a report on this grant to all of the members of the committee and the chair. The information being provided is in direct conflict of information that I've been provided by the department, and my request would be, I don't want to bring the department up and do a big thing, but if there is an ability for the department to provide some written information back to the chair and to the committee, you have time before you put your budget bill together, and I would prefer that the, not at a committee hearing, but we get some follow-up information from the Department of Corrections on this program, the latest grant period, and the services rendered.
Chair.
Thank you, Representative Zerwas. We will make that read. Would the department have any response to this, please?
Chair, this is Safia Khan, Government Relations Director for the DOC. Representative, that's a great question. As you know, I am new into this role, and I am available to talk to you after this hearing to talk about what your questions are, or if any other committee members have any questions that you would like some written documentation on. I'll go back and talk to our folks in finance and grants and bring back whatever information you're looking for. Thank you.
I guess I just want to make sure that you're clear, you're clear on what Representative Zerwas' request is?
Chair, Senator, yep. I can just, we can connect, but I think what I heard from you was you would like more information about the grant period that this organization provided services to folks incarcerated and kind of what the deliverables were during that time.
And you make sure that everybody gets included in the committee on that?
Chair, yes, I will
hand
it over to you. Thank you.
Representative Zerwas. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you had said that you were under contract, but you no longer are under contract. I guess it was through a grant program, but you were not given, so it was $40,000 for an 18-month period, but that was, you know, a few months back. So have you been renewed or not? And if not, why not?
Ms. Brooks or yeah. Representative Dean?
Chair, Representative, yes, I was under contract for 18 months, and it was $40,000 and for services. I'm glad you said that were services, which is different from actual visits. So I'm not sure. I just wanted to make that distinction that we were employed for, we were contracted for services. No, the contract was not renewed through MNSIRR, M-N-S-I-R-R. It was not renewed. The reason given, I did attend the closing of that contract for MNSIRR and who was approved to be renewed and who was not, and there was no reason given to me at that closing meeting, so I'm not sure why we were not renewed when the situation still exists. So I asked to be renewed. I've met with them, and we were not renewed.
Chair.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm just sort of piecing all these things together. I did look at your budget proposal, okay, and it looks like it's $400,000. So we're going from $40,000 to $400,000, but the paper that we're looking at for appropriation says $800,000 for 1 year. So those are vastly, vastly different numbers. This one says it says 800,000 for the year of 2020.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Dean, don't I remember you trying to get money for this last year?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative O'Neill, that would be my part, that it should have been for a two-year period, not for a one-year period, in the drafting of the bill. And we will get that corrected should this move forward into the bonding bill. I mean, this is the room I'm in for bonding, so my head's like spinning, into the omnibus bill.
Okay.
Follow-up, Representative O'Neill?
I'd like to continue. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, so I just wanted to point out some of these numbers. You had gotten a grant for $40,000. The budget says $400,000. That's 10 times as large. You had struggles, as you stated, getting things together, and that's why you only had 57 visits, but you had other services. Your current budget is $100,000, but again, your ask is four times as much as your current budget. And I used to work in nonprofit, so I feel your pain, but that's a big, big jump. So I have concerns there. I also have concerns that, again, the language is written essentially as a direct appropriation, which we don't do through the grant programming. So it really needs to be a competitive grant. And I do have a question after all of that concern. I believe the testimony came forward in the previous bill that the governor's budget has $150,000 and $150,000 of a competitive grant. And now I'm not sure, is that specific for transportation or exactly what is that for? Because we're not able to find that in the budget summary. So if you could explain exactly what the competitive grant is for.
Representative Dean or...
Mr. Chair, I'll defer to DOC on this.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, the $150,000 per year for the biennium is for transportation services for those who are incarcerated for up to three facilities, I believe is the language in our budget.
And just a follow-up to that.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So as the testifier spoke, Ms. Brooks, she talked about that they do transportation and then they do other services, and they were under contract for other services. Is there something in the governor's budget proposal then that has some sort of a competitive grant for these other services, or is there something in that area?
Ms. Kahn.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the governor's budget speaks to the transportation services. My understanding from talking to our folks and kind of listening to the testimony that was offered for the previous bill is that that would include the services of getting the kids enrolled, bringing the kids there, having some sort of programming available for them through the ride when they get to the facility. So that would all be included. The governor's budget is not as detailed, which is why it is a kind of a competitive grant process, is the anticipation, is what is anticipated in the budget.
And then at some point I'd like to move my amendment when we're done with the conversation.
Why don't you go ahead and do it now?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A1. And again, this is because this organization is new to us at the legislature. They're very, very small. As the testifier said, less than $100,000 of activity per year, and this would require them to also submit not only their report, but also federal and state financial reports to the legislature. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative O'Neill moves the A1 amendment to Representative Dean's 1518. My community administrator is trying to mess me up here. Give me the wrong number. Would you care to... Do you think you need to restate your amendment? It's the same one as last one, right?
I stated it, Mr. Chair, it's the A1, and I stated exactly what it just said.
Okay, I'm sorry. I was whispering in my other ear. All right, any discussion on the amendment? Okay, all those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? No. Okay, their A1 is adopted. Where are we? More discussion, more testifiers. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And, I understand the intent of the A1 amendment. And I think that, of course, we want to make sure that these programs are doing what they're all meant to do. I also want to caution us that I believe the DOC is in charge of the money that's allocated to them, and I would hope that they are making sure that these programs are meeting the obligations and the requirements as well. So I'll just sort of put that to the record. I have sort of a unique set of life experiences. And while I was locked up, the thing that I look forward to was the visit from my mom and dad. You don't know what it's like come visit day. The attitudes of people change. And what you often see is you see individuals who were anticipating a visit, and that visit doesn't happen. It can be very, very devastating. We need to do everything we can. I mean, we're a rehabilitative state. We're not a punitive state. We don't have a penal system. Our job is to rehabilitate individuals, and I think from the day that an individual enters into the Department of Corrections sort of sphere, we should be doing everything we can every day to prepare them for the day that they're going to come out. As mentioned, 95% of these people will come back out into society, and I think it's to all of our advantage to make sure that they come out to be the best citizens and lead the fullest lives that they can, and these types of programs are the programs that will allow that to happen. So I want to thank the committee for consideration, and I just look forward to having other discussions and making sure that we get you the information that you want so that you can all make informed decisions as well.
Thank you, Representative Dean, for sharing your unique insights into this. Really appreciate it. The chair moves to lay over the bill for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you. And with that, we are adjourned.